Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont. Hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West share their knowledge and expertise on topics specific to the opportunities and challenges of building and renovating in Vermont. Brought to you today by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing. ShamrockPaintingCompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basementy. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association, online, homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington, one call does it all, online at polyconstruction.com. Your participation is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 1-877-291-8255. Now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Jim Bradley here with House Calls Vermont and also my colleague, Chris West.
Good afternoon, everyone.
We're so glad that you've been able to join us today. This has been an interesting couple of weeks for everybody. And, you know, the beginning of this always has that disclaimer about the fact that you shouldn't take any advice except for a licensed contractor when we don't really have licensed contractor
in
the state.
No.
Unless they're traveling from another state.
Or unless they're building commercial.
Yeah, that's true.
They have
that's
licenses.
Yeah. But things have changed in the last couple of weeks. There's with the state legislature, there's been Bill H-157, which is about the contractor registry.
And we spoke about that a couple of weeks ago.
Exactly. Well, it actually did pass out of committee on the House, and it's going over to the Senate after crossover. And hopefully we'll have success there to get this thing off the ground once and for all. But, things have definitely been, as I said, a little bit challenging the last several weeks as far as the industry is concerned. A lot of you will notice as you go to the lumber yard or your local hardware store, some of our sponsors as well, you'll see that prices are just getting really, really out of control in many respects. And also some of the availability of some of the common materials have started to change. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that today. And also we welcome your calls today for sure. If you can call us at 802-244-1777, 802-244-1777. Feel free to give us a call to discuss any of your projects that you have coming up, new builds, renovation work, or if you're just looking to find a contractor and you're wondering who to go with and what you should be asking them at the same time. But Chris, in this time, you were able to actually testify this week to the legislature about the bill, and give us a little bit of background of what you were able to discuss with them, if you would.
So contractor license is not a license. We're going for a registry, right? When I was speaking with the people who were working on that particular, that's the House H-157 bill, I was able to bring up some important and salient points. First of all, this is, from our point of view, the history on this is really important. We have not had a registry. If you were to ask how many builders there are in the state, nobody in the state actually knows. The home builders don't know. The state doesn't know. The Office of Professional
Office of Professional Regulation. OPR.
Registration, I was going to say.
OPR.
Regulation. I got my R words a bit messed up. They don't know. In about just after the or around the time in 2008 when we had the crisis, the financial crisis, a number of the leaders at the home builders decided that the state was not going to move forward on any kind of list for tracking who in the state is a contractor at all, never mind who is a contractor who has taken advantage of people or who has done bad work. So a couple of the founding members of that group decided to make a private registry. And they went through and they looked at all the legal points and they put together something that they thought was going to be very light touch. We don't want to add a huge level of
bureaucracy
yeah. on top of a state that's already strained with low income to the bureaucracy. And we know bureaucracies are not where you want to put money if you want an efficient way to do with it. So, Ward Smith of Turtle Creek Builders and Ward Babb of Babb, law firm,
yes.
and a number of other people got together and they built a private registry. And then, this was in 2007, and then 2008 happened and the whole industry blew up. And it took like 5 years for everything to settle down again. And we started looking at the registry a couple of years ago, about as the VBRA, as the members of the Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association, we were looking at maybe restarting this and doing it as a private registry. And then we heard that the Attorney General and other people were starting to discuss doing this on a state level, which is where we stepped in. And that was one of the things I discussed. I wanted them to know the history of that. I also wanted them to know that what we're saying is not all builders are bad builders.
Oh, gosh, no.
It's really important. There are a lot of builders out there who were trained by people who were good builders, but they didn't know the building science about making a house tighter. If we're going to leave houses at 5 or 10 air changes per hour, all of this stuff that we're talking about is less important because we're not trapping moisture, and that trapped moisture then turns to mold and rot and all kinds of things. So as we're making our houses tighter and tighter, which makes them more efficient, we have to not build them the same way as we used to. New materials, Jim is always bringing up.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful about that.
And the one thing that's important is there is a desire by contractors to say, where can I get this information?
Yeah.
We are contacted, especially from the show, but even from other sources or other venues, we are contacted on a regular basis by contractors who understand. I mean, they're great builders. They're
yeah.
conscientious builders.
Most importantly, yeah.
Yeah, and then they find out that, oh, my gosh, I've created this problem. And this year has been the perfect setup for a lot of icing events, a lot of icicles, ice dams, water in the house, water in the ceilings.
Good cold winter, lots of snow on the roof.
Yep.
We can really see the problems on those types of weather moments.
And so some of these problems that have been dormant have come to life. And so these builders are calling us and saying, what did I do? How do I fix this?
Yep.
And so people want to know. And so with this registry and the educational opportunities that it can bring, that's what we're hoping that this will engender in our state, which is known for its organic development of programs, the ability for more builders to get this understanding of building science. They do a great job of building a house, but let's make sure it's appointed appropriately from the building science perspective as well. Right now we're going to go to our phones, though. We do have a call from Rich in Starksboro. Rich, go ahead with your question today.
Hi. I've been doing a lot of serious thinking about this registry and this legislation that you've been talking about. And one of the things you're not considering in all your discussion is the number of people engaged in the trades industries. There's a serious shortage. If you want someone to do something for you, it's going to take like 4 months if they ever return your calls. I really think putting them through more hoops like this is just going to make it more difficult, raise the price. And another thing, if I want to have something like a deck put on my house, which doesn't have any air sealing or air exchanges, I don't really want to have someone have to be certified in some other thing that doesn't have to do with decks. So I just wanted to mention that. And it sort of kind of makes me think of that town report down in Stratton. The gist of what they say on the cover of the town report in Stratton this year says, if you came from here because you didn't like it there, now that you're here, please don't try to make here like there.
Yeah. Well, I think you have valid concerns. I want to recognize that first. We do not want to create a barrier for people getting into the business. But let me explain exactly what it is that the bill is looking at. We're looking at
the customers, having somebody you can count on. I mean,
Yeah.
You know, even I work with the mom and pop type people, and they're so busy. You know, the everybody, all us people from age, you know, 16 to 25, they want to go to college and make some kind of big money, but they don't realize they can make more big money in the contract. And I think you ought to do some talk about education.
Absolutely.
People and what the opportunities are in your field.
Right. I do want to make sure I touch on the other points, though, because you're right about the education. And Jim and I don't know how much you've been listening to the show, but we're huge on education. And we insisted that education be a part of any kind of registry moving forward, that these builders have to learn this. And education also going to the high school students, going to people just coming out of the military, coming to people who are new Vermonters, looking at people who are also in different industries that they've lost work in. We want to get those people into this industry. But I did want to just, first of all, talk about exactly what this registry would be as far as you were saying a burden. And we're talking about a biannual fee of $250 to be on this registry. And an initial fee of $100 just to register, right? So we're talking about $125 just to make sure that the state knows, A, that you're a builder, B, that you're carrying insurance, so that if something goes wrong, that you're not just walking away leaving the homeowner with a mess. And that is... It pretty much it. We do have we're looking for a requirement for people to be educated in that as well. But we're just saying minimum. Give us a list of everybody who's working in this industry, all the companies that are doing this, and make sure that they have insurance. There's also any job that is less than $2,500 is not covered by this. So if you're doing all $1,000 jobs, $1,200 jobs, this doesn't even come into play.
But one thing that's important, Chris, we were just at a house two weeks ago, Chris and I were, maybe it was even last week, and we were doing a home assessment, but we found, and these people haven't lived in this home very long, we found that it was relatively new construction and that the decks were not flashed appropriately.
Right.
And so over time, one of the number one accidents in a home, nationally speaking, is deck failure.
Yep.
Because they're not flashed right, they're not attached right.
Attached right to the perimeter joist beam and rot out.
And no flashing, yeah, yep. Exactly. And so it creates a real issue. So having proper education on how to construct that instead of just the ability to put it there, and how do you make sure it lasts and it's going to stay safe, that's what we're looking for, because this registry gives an opportunity to communicate appropriately and offer the proper education within our state to the builders who need it and want it, desire it, but just don't know where to go. And so that's one thing that's really, really important for us as well.
Yeah, I forgot to mention the contract registry bill also requires that if you're doing work above $2,500, that there's a contract involved. Imagine that we have to tell a contractor that they need to have a written document that says that what they're going to do, what it's going to cost, and what the terms are in case there's a change in price in materials, or they have to push it off, or they have to walk away. Those are things that protect the consumer and should be out there anyway, that there are builders out there doing it on a song and a handshake.
Yeah, well, simple business practices, you know.
I think you ought to put something in there where it says you've got to return the call after three times.
No, I hear you, Rich. Rich, that's what I was alluding to a little bit earlier, is things have just become so out of touch in so many respects. It's just hyper-accelerated in our market right now with significant...
It's way pre-COVID. It's not just...
Yes.
No, you're right.
I do want to point out...
Nobody wants to be a plumber, or nobody wants to, you know, to be an electrician.
We've tried to do that. We've tried to do that for years, and we're still in the fight to make sure that people see that when kids are going to school, that they do not see the contracting industry as, well, if I can't do this, at least I can go into contracting.
Yeah.
You know, because what we do and how we've invested our time, Chris and myself as building science professionals and builders as well, is to educate ourselves and basically have done well, you know, in the industry at the same time. And so you're right. It is a great profession. You can make really good money there because you have to be invested in this type of education out there instead of just going off to college, racking up a lot of debt, and then wondering how you're going to pay for it and whether you're even going to have a job in your career field. So I agree with you, and we are trying to make inroads in that. Lou Castle, who's part of the Vermont Builders and Remodelers Association. He's out of Cornwall, Vermont, and he has gone to the trade schools, and he's trying to get the word out. And as soon as we were starting to make traction to have a better program in place, here comes COVID, and everything shuts down.
Yeah.
But it's being reinvigorated.
You great, so great in your show, you have an excellent opportunity to tell the young folks, or at least probably most of the parents of these young folks,
yeah, right,
what the opportunities are for them to go to, you know, to go to a trade school or just apprentice with a carpenter,
with a builder, which are both,
yeah,
those are all initiatives that we're currently working on.
So you're,
not
you're
only
singing
on
our
this
song,
bill, exactly. I do want to point out that just because your deck does not have to do with a heated part of your house does not mean you need to know building science about doing it. And that's
okay,
really
let's
important.
Use a chicken coop there.
Yeah, kitchen. There you go. Then you can do anything
well,
you want.
Well, the chickens like to stay warm too, though.
Thank you so much for calling, Rich. I hope we've been able
to
help you.
Yeah.
And as usual, our Saturday regular visit from Steve Spatz. Welcome, Steve. How's it going?
Hey, guys. Going well. Good to see you.
Yeah. Yeah, we've actually been spending most of the week meeting about this bill that we've been going on. So we spent a lot of time talking with you this week. But how are things going in general?
Spring is here, so certainly welcoming this past week, as I think everybody is. Maybe feeling a little bit of light at the end of some long dark tunnel.
So I think my son was saying my son was saying, this is the moment when the people with seasonal affective disorder depression go, ah.
Well, I myself, though, I was looking at things, and there's just been so many things, as I alluded to earlier, is that we've been challenged with in the industry and everything else, and some of just the longstanding way that events in our country have been going for a bit. It's just like I asked some people, some of my colleagues, I said, did anybody see where I put my good news? Because I can't seem to find it these days, just because every time we turn around, there's something more that you're challenged with. In the industry, we're really starting to see, what was it? Rich alluded to the shortage of workers, which we understand that, and that definitely has to grow. In fact, I was talking to Art Wolf, who's an economist and a previous client of mine. He was saying that they're showing in the construction industry that the workforce is still 20% down compared to where it was just a year and a half ago. And so that's still pretty significant. And but the demand isn't down.
No.
The demand is skyrocketed as far as new construction, renovation, do-it-yourself projects, and things like that. But we're looking at a lot of supply chain issues right now, too, as far as factories that have been shut down, where people had used just-in-time shipping and delivery. Now, when you need it, and it's not there, there's no backlog or there's no inventory, you can't draw from anything. And we just heard from some of my subcontractors, foam, two-part spray foam, they can't even obtain right now.
Wow.
And because we changed rules at the 1st of January in our state and a few others about what can be in the foam as far as the blowing agents, and that put a disruption in the industry. And then we had the cold snap in Texas, which that's where one of the major manufacturers of these chemicals were based, and they can't produce the product. And so now you go to use this, and you go to move forward with your project, but you can't because you can't get some of the materials. And that's going to translate into two-part spray foam and also into board spray foam, rigid board spray foam. Steve, what are some of the things that you're hearing about and seeing in the industry as far as some of the challenges that are out there?
Well, I think that's the primary one right there. I mean, those constraints with product availability and material production were happening even prior to those events in Texas and the recent legislation that was enacted, or the law that was enacted in removing hydrofluorocarbons from foam products. You know, this trickles back, for the past year, but it's really compounded itself at this point. There's efforts being made on a national, federal level to try to address this. There are some levers that the industry, I think, feels can be pulled to start to ease some of this. But, I think Jim, you make a good point there that, we've accommodated basically a just-in-time delivery sort of manufacturing economy for years now, and when that starts to become interrupted, the effects are compounding. So, I am seeing it start to affect people's decision making. I mean, it's rational to think if your options for building something now are going to cost you, 50% more in materials or 25% more in materials than they would have 6 months ago, you may have to reconsider if and when you can do the work. So.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
It's
I've got a neighbor who's been trying to put a barn up for 3 years and priced it out
about a year ago.
Pretty much a year and a half ago. And when he revisited it just a couple of months ago, thinking, let me get my orders in early because I want 3 or 4 weeks, maybe even 2 months of lead time to get the stuff here, it was twice as expensive for materials. And so he's just going to put it on hold until things get less expensive.
Yeah, and even suppliers right now, too, are only holding quotes for a day or a matter of days right now. So if you get an addition package from a supplier quoted on price, they're only going to guarantee that price for a day or a couple, whereas before it was usually a 30-day or sometimes even longer term. So unfortunately, there's still a lot of volatility there. You can be hopeful that, the changes that are coming our way in regard to hopefully opening the economy a little bit more with vaccinations and just some hopeful easing as we get through a more mature stage of this COVID crisis, that things will begin to ease. I mean, these costs are at unprecedented levels and, unheard of levels that were from before. So can only imagine they have to go down, and hopefully down they will in a more significant way soon.
Sure. And with that, you were in some of these discussions we've been having the last couple of weeks, Steve, between us and other groups, you were able to be a part of that as far as the weatherization goes. And why do you find it, we know why we would, but why do you find it so important that somebody who's doing weatherization and improvements to their home really gets this message that is being brought forth? And I don't want it to be seen as the only message that, this is just building science all the time. But when you're constructing something, as I have often said, it's not just about knowing how to swing the hammer. It's also about how to appoint it appropriately with respect to building science so it's going to last. It's going to be safe and healthy. With that being said, some of those discussions that we were having, and if they're really, when this money does come to the state and it's going to be utilized for some of these projects, what are some of the takeaways that Vermonters should know about, when that money comes forth from S-109 is what it's being called right now for the weatherization bill? What are some of the things that they should be looking out for or that we're trying to address behind the scenes?
Well, I mean, I think the hopeful outcome here is that we have a governor who's interested in investing in weatherization, more potential at the federal level to focus on this as well. Everyone who is a homeowner and has the privilege to own their own home, that's most likely their biggest investment that they've made. And it's something that you wanted to retain value. And to be able to address weatherization in a sustainable way and a comprehensive way over, the years ahead, which is, a hopeful trajectory that we may be on here. It really is about investing in the durability of our homes and making them lasting so that, when you've made that investment and you come to a time when you want to, move or cash in on that investment, that you're not in a losing position because you've done things and maintained things in a way that the asset you've built there will stand to last. And we've learned a lot about how buildings work. That it's been important because of the evolution of material that's used in buildings and the process involved. So, these core fundamentals really are the underpinnings of the industry. And yep. I think anyone who's invested, as you guys were talking about earlier, what it means to make a career out of being in the construction industry, the people who do this work are passionate and have a value of the craftsmanship that they bring to the table. Yep. And, everyone can benefit to always be evolving the work that they do. And, the more access to information that can be provided and can potentially be supported,
yes,
by federal or state programs, that's all the better. And I can only expect that if we can get those sorts of things in place, that we'll have an industry that's eager to absorb that information.
And even now, contractors, homeowners, have a wonderful place to go for some of those resources right now, not just YouTube, but there's another group. What was that name of that group again that you work with, Steve?
Well, You got it. That's, you know, a huge part of Efficiency Vermont's work over the past couple decades has been to build a sustainable industry around weatherization for the average homeowner. And, you know, we really have invested in that. We've invested in our contractor partners. We've invested in the knowledge and the support that we have from Efficiency Vermont for not only the contractors, but for consumers and homeowners as well. So, you know, we've been all in this for the past 20 years, and, you know, we'd like to see the next 10 years really dramatically build on that foundation and really make an impact here in the state.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, some of the feedback we've gotten, I had to it was just interesting that they say that the show that we're doing tends to be an infomercial, 1 hour infomercial
for
Efficiency Vermont. And I mean, Steve, you haven't even talked about the air fryer, or, you know, don't answer yet because you get a free set of knives. You know, it's so much more than that. It's not just highlighting Efficiency Vermont, but it is showcasing in one way where are there resources that homeowner and contractor alike can go to a website very quickly, get those resources, find a contractor who is participating in this way, who is becoming more knowledgeable, and as a homeowner, watch some of the videos that are there. Take some of the trainings that are available so you become more educated, whether you're doing the project yourself or you're hiring a contractor, so you know what type of work should be expected to make something that's lasting, as you said. And as fuel prices start to go up, oh my gosh, I mean, it's going to be more expensive.
You think it's busy right now.
Yes,
in
exactly.
The contracting and the weatherization industry, it's going to get crazy if fuel prices get back up to $3.50 and $4 a gallon. Well, Steve, that's all the time we have to talk to you. Thank you so much again for being available and giving us your insight. We're hoping that this word will get out and we'll talk more about the weatherization bill when we get off with you. But thank you so much for taking time out, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right, take care, guys. Have a great afternoon.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. And so that's some of the things that have become, you know, part of this challenge is we've had ebbs and flows within the industry for, you know, decades for sure. And this is nothing completely new, but to have all the things, all the variables at the table at the same time with material issues, the costs, the demand, you know, so we usually it's a supply and demand issue, but we have little supply in some respects and a high demand on several levels, but part of that supply that's low is also the workers themselves.
Yep.
And so as Rich was saying, you know, what can you do to make it more interesting for workers? It's not just the high school level, but it's also the people who are transitioning from maybe the hospitality industry where they didn't have work anymore because the business closed.
Or coming out of the military.
Exactly.
Or new Vermonters, people who are moving here.
The Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program.
Exactly.
Vermont Works for Women. This type of thing. There are plenty of job opportunities out there and a reason for people to consider this type of career field.
Yep.
Because if you invest yourself, you'll yield, you know, the harvest out of what you've sown, you know, so just make sure that you don't overlook this. And parents out there, I think Rich was completely right, you know, for your kids who are coming up.
Or your grandkids.
Grandkids, exactly. If they're trying to consider something and say, okay, do I have to go to college necessarily? It doesn't mean you don't get any kind of education.
No.
Like I said, this is a continuing education type of field that we're in, and you need to stay on top of things. But yet the initial huge debt amount, you're not going to be encumbered with that and when you're first starting to get going in life. Instead, you can get into the trade like an electrician or a plumber or an HVAC tech, a builder, a building science person, an energy auditor. I mean, there's just so many options out there for a young individual who's getting into the, you know, a new career, and that you don't have to say, well, it's just the bottom rung. It's the last choice. No, it needs to be the first choice. And so many mental pathways where the people are thinking about what am I going to do, you need to be able to consider this as not the last resort, but definitely the first choice.
Yeah, the Home Builders and Remodelers Association has been working for the past couple of years to try to work with other partners, and including the tech centers and high schools, and start getting to the job fairs and saying to students, look, when you go to a job fair, it's a bunch of colleges, and then it's the military, and then it's nothing. And so what we want to say is, being a builder, apprenticing with a builder, after you graduate with high school, getting an entry-level job with a carpenter, you're going to be making $15 to $20 an hour. And after your first 2 or 3 years, you could be making $30, $40 an hour. This is a situation that instead of spending 4 years in college, if you're not interested in a collegiate path and are just feeling like you have to do that because that's what the expectation is, but you're not interested, going into the building industry is a great opportunity because you will walk out of 4 years of being in the building industry making $70,000, $80,000 a year instead of being $120,000 in debt and then not, you know, having a degree that you can't necessarily pay back these student loans because there's no employment in that industry. I mean, that we're working very hard to try to make the job market and the throughput of new people who want a job into the building industry as easy as possible. Although we were having meetings before COVID hit, Jim was staying with various players in the training, the local regional training centers, people involved with the State Department of Labor. And what I noticed as I was waiting for the meeting to start, we had four people in the room, all in their 70s or something like that, and all of them are still working on this. And they got into the room, they looked at each other and say, hey, weren't we in a meeting about this in 1985? And they looked at each other and said, I remember you being there. And nothing has happened.
Exactly.
So what we end up happening in Vermont, I love Vermont. Vermont is a great state, but it does have this legislature that will make these high and lofty goals, not put any kind of sustained effort behind it. And I don't mean 2 years of financing. I mean 10 years of
exactly
of real dedicated.
Well, what's the
financing.
10-year goal? What's the 10-year goal out there?
It was a 20-year goal when the Comprehensive Energy Plan passed.
Yeah.
The Comprehensive Energy Plan is a plan that was put together by the legislature and passed in 2010, I think it was. And it said by 2030, we want to have 120,000 houses weatherized to be more energy efficient to meet our state's goals of reducing not only our carbon loads but also to reduce the cost to the people who are in these houses mm-hmm. and give them a more comfortable, durable house moving into the future.
Sure.
Well, here we are 10 years later and we still don't have enough. We're doing 2,000 houses a year.
At most.
We're not going to be hitting 120,000 houses by that time. So
no.
We're fortunately, Jim and I have been tapped to be, hopefully, depending on if the bill passes, to be a part of helping to develop that program with other leaders in the state, along with Efficiency Vermont, along with the Sustainable Energy Outreach Network of that's down in Brattleboro, mm-hmm. and Vermont Passive House. We have a lot of very involved, the weather-resistant programs. Weatherization assistance programs. So there is stuff afoot. And that is Bill S.
109.
109.
It's going through the Senate
so
right now.
So if you want to get behind this is a larger weatherization bill that has $2 million that is being earmarked for
workforce
development, specifically to create a trained workforce that can go out there and not only to do the dirty work in the attics, but to build, make companies, because right now we just don't have enough companies to have enough people to go out and do all the work to do what we need to do a year, which is about 12,000 houses a year.
Yeah.
So this is something we recommend you getting in touch with your senator, and if you don't take our word for it. We don't want to tell you what to tell your senator. Look into the bill. If you have questions, send us an email at housecallsvt@gmail.com. We'd be happy to discuss it more and come up with your own opinion and then tell your legislator, your senator, what you think about
and your
this
representative
bill.
Too, because it is crossover.
It
so
is
this
crossover.
Is going to be
yeah.
going over to the other side of the aisle, if you will, or the other chamber. And it's very important that Vermonters are vocal because the governor has earmarked money for this, not just the workforce development, but also some of these weatherization programs. And it's a good first step because really to get 120,000 homes, you're not going to that $25 million and the $16 million and
it's $2 million in workforce development that we're looking
yep.
at, and that's good for about 2 years of the program and as it's been put out there. But after the 2 years, if they drop it like a hot potato like they have yep. in the past because something else comes up, then we're never going to see the fruition of reaching the goal of the comprehensive energy plan or of developing that workforce. Now, we don't think anybody wants to spend the rest of their life crawling in attics, getting rid of insulation, air sealing attics, but it is a way into an industry. And once you are that weatherization tech, you can easily move on to being a carpenter with another company or starting your own weatherization company and hiring other people to do that work.
Right now we're going to go to our phones, though, and we're going to come back to this topic. But we have Karen in Hardwick. Karen, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. I called Efficiency Vermont and asked if they had any suggestions for a 200-year-old plank house.
Okay.
And they told me they never heard of such a thing.
Oh, my gosh. We have seen so many, and it's such an interesting type of construction. And I think we actually talked about one of them that we went to a few weeks back on one of our shows.
Yep.
Are there specific issues that
well,
you are...
Well, I want to just address the Efficiency Vermont thing. So when you call that number... you're going to be talking to the person who picked up the phone. As far as I understand how the layers work, you're going to be talking to a person who's really trained to talk to you about getting good light bulbs. Are you interested in a heat pump? Are you interested
in
the...
Well, she put me on with somebody who was supposed to know.
Oh, okay. Well, that is a concern. Yeah, tell us more about this call.
Well, that's all I can tell you.
Okay. So with that, plank construction is really interesting. For people who don't know, you know, there's different type of construction methods out there, sure. You can use a stone wall assembly. You can do different types of framing for a wall
like
assembly.
2x4, 69 center.
Yeah, you can do that. Western box framing is one type. There was balloon framing. That was another type. But plank construction back in the day is when they took the trees that were available and they would saw down basically 2 inch thick and
3 inch in some cases.
Well, some, yeah. And they would, instead of turning them on edge perpendicular to the wall, they would actually turn them on flat. And that became the framing. And they would attach it to timbers above and below. And there was really no wall cavity to speak of. It was just you had the siding on the outside, you had the plank, and then on the inside you had some type of durable finish, maybe plaster lath.
So the structure of the building is actually not the planks, right? The planks fill between the timber frame. It's basically a timber frame house.
Yep, exactly. And so with
they're also the structure. They're the only thing that holds it, the mortise and tenons.
Yes.
Top and bottom.
Yep. Yes, indeed. But there's really no insulation opportunity. And so with the R value of wood being R1 per inch, and you're looking for a wall assembly sometimes today that we want at least an R25 or 40 or whatever, it's hard to achieve that unless you build on top of that either to the outside or to the inside. And so with that, are there certain issues that you're currently having, Karen, with the home?
Well, they don't even saw the edges of the planks. They still got bark on them, so there's great gaps between planks.
Yep. Sure.
So I've been here 40 years, and the wind blows through.
Okay.
But I'm getting tired of it. I'm getting too old.
Sure. So when we would come to your home and do an assessment, we would find out what are the challenges you're having with the home. But then we would also look at, okay, where is the best opportunity to improve? Or do we build into the home? And that sometimes is the case where you actually have to put insulation on the inside. Or most likely, we're going to look at the condition of the siding. And a lot of times what we'll do is we'll build an assembly that includes a WRB, which is a weather-resistant barrier.
That's that membrane we spoke of about a couple of weeks ago.
And that also serves as an air barrier at the same time. And then we'll put insulation on the outside of the wall, which then means you're doing a built-up assembly, and then you have to put strapping for a rain screen, and then you attach your siding to that. And once you're all done, I mean, you won't even be able to tell that that's what you were doing because the house is going to still look
from
great.
From the inside, it'll look exactly the same.
Exactly. But it does
help.
But
you're talking about big bucks.
Yes.
It's a big
that
office.
That is the problem. So you have a house that's probably charming and beautiful. It's old, it's leaky, and it's uncomfortable and costs a lot to heat. There are no...
No, it doesn't. Wood's free.
Well, wood is not free. I'm sure that somebody's doing the bucking and chopping and all of that. So, but I'm glad that you have the access to an inexpensive heat source, but that does not mean that that's a sustainable long term, right? There would be, I remember I spoke about this. I was at an energy committee meeting in St. Albans, and there was a gentleman who countered to my saying that his old farmhouse should be properly insulated and air sealed. He said, well, I just heat my house with wood. And I said, well, how many cords of wood are you going through a year? He said, oh, 19. And the gentleman was in his late 80s and he was bucking his own 19 cords of wood. And I said, what happens if you trip and you hurt yourself and you're unable to buck wood for a month? Are you going to just have a cold winter? I'm glad that you have an inexpensive source, but there are no simple fixes for making a house like yours.
There are solutions, but you're right. You're right, Karen. They're not inexpensive. But if you would like, you could definitely follow up with us. Yep. Maybe at housecallsvermont.com.
Housecallsvt@gmail.com.
I'm sorry.
For the email.
Yes.
And I think the right thing to do from our point of view would be to arrange to have an assessment on your house so we can tell you what we would say the best way to move forward with your house is, and then you'd have a plan and an idea of what that might cost, and you can say no, or you can say partially, or you can say staged it, or you can say yes, and those are all important things to be able to gauge.
Well, first off, I don't have a computer.
And okay.
Second, understood.
I think I'll probably just buy a few more rolls of plastic for next winter.
Well, one thing too, that you're basically called at the right time, because the bill that we were just speaking about, S-109, should it stay in that number iteration, I'm not sure, but if it gets passed, it's the weatherization bill. It's going to key in on people's incomes that are moderate to low income in the state and offer better incentives for having some of this work done. And so there already are incentives out there, but in most cases it's anywhere between $1,000 to $3,000, depending on your income level. But this money is going to be specially tagged and directed towards people of moderate to low income. And if you're maybe on a retirement income, maybe you're on a fixed income or something like that, that would be really a great opportunity for somebody to tap into those monies. And it doesn't mean that the walls are the first place. No. You may find that the attic is a better place too. You can't change everything, but maybe there's a great opportunity in the attic to stop some of that heat from getting out.
And that so depends on what we find during an assessment.
Exactly.
Here's what I want to propose, Karen. You don't have to have email to get in touch with us. If after you get off the phone, you hang on for a second, Joel will take your telephone number and other information, and we'll get in touch with you offline and set up, if you're interested, a visit where we can assess your house and give you that information, and you can make informed choices about how you want to move forward. How's that sound?
Let me ask you a separate question.
Sure.
Do you know anybody who specializes in old barns?
Yes.
Doing what to old barns?
Keeping them from falling down.
Yeah, what was that? Was it the Vermont Heritage, the one that did the one over there? This is the wedding barn now over
Clark. Yeah, the money for barns is only if you have enough to pay for the whole restoration. They'll reimburse you half.
Sure. Right. Yeah, that's true. That is true.
We're trying to survive off milking 30 cows, and right. There's no money for us.
Yeah.
Understood. But yes, and that is another company that we do have access to, and we'll be able to get you that information as well, that the company that does specialize in that type of work. So if you'll give your number to Joel, we'll definitely touch base with you after the show.
I did want to do a little bit more of explanation about that Senate bill, because Jim threw out some numbers, 25 million, 16 million, 952, and all of this.
There's been a lot of proposals.
It's all the same money. It's
yes.
Just the division and buckets, right?
Yes.
So the state is getting $25 million to put towards from the federal government to put towards its weatherization programs. $16 million of that is being broken into three bits. $9 million is going to go to the Vermont Federal Housing Agency, which will be, for as far as I understand it, a program to provide low interest loans
exactly.
To people who want to do this work. $5 million of that is going to Efficiency Vermont to continue the subsidies and their programs that they're already doing through the EEN and other programs that they're doing. And the $2 million is specifically earmarked for the workforce development part. And that's what Jim and I have been spending the last week feverishly getting a coalition of people together who are the knowledge base in Vermont on how to do that type of thing right, using building science basics. And also, most of us are also educators, so we know how to train people how to do this work in the field, but also in the classroom. And we have ability and access to knowledge on how to help people develop businesses. So that is that bill, S-109. So keep an eye on that. Right now we have Mark in Roxbury who's calling. Mark, how can we help you?
How are you boys doing today?
We're doing pretty
well.
Thanks.
How are you?
Well, not too bad.
Good.
I just want to say something about the young people out there that are going into the workforce or in the workforce in this industry. It's kind of important for the future here. But what my story is, I turned 50 this year, and I did carpentry and a tech school. But what I set out to do was learn everything I could. And I went through the electrical apprenticeship, the plumbing apprenticeship, and heating. I always looked at my work as artwork, anywhere from an electrical panel to a wall manifold to heating.
Yes.
But the end result of all this is that by learning all this, I don't have to call anybody for anything.
Sure.
Now, if my furnace goes down, I can do that. Anything. And that's the way to look at it. Whatever job you do, I mean, where can you use it in your own personal life?
That's a very good point of view.
And that's a huge saving. Like, last summer, my well pump went. Hold it up myself, change it myself, where if you call a well company, you're looking at, what, $3,000 to $5,000?
Yep.
You know, and that's a huge savings, and it's a more of a feel-good thing because you did it yourself, you know?
Yeah, and see, that's a great thing, and I've told my sons before because they've seen me in the field and struggling at times as far as just being busy, 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 and they've said, you know, we never want to do that. We're just going to make enough money so we can hire somebody to do the work ourselves. And yet I tell them, I say, the thing is, what you understand is, when just like you just mentioned, Mark, is the fact that once you are able to do this yourself, there's such a sense of confidence that doesn't just stay here at the trade side of life. It carries into so many other things, and we could do plenty of shows about this, but it's getting that confidence level to be able to tackle something that you've never seen before, you know, you've never encountered before, and you got to figure it out and be able to get there to the other side of this. And then once you do and you have success there, I mean, that's something you don't necessarily get in school. You know, you've got to be there, and, you know, you can get it by passing it down from one generation to the next, by the apprenticeship program, from proper parenting, things like that. But being able to do that, and then so that it doesn't just stay with you, but it actually gets passed on to somebody else and they have that same experience. Yeah, that's something that the trades has an advantage over a lot of other different professions, because it's set up for that, to where you're going to have somebody who is entry level, who will learn a trade and will figure things out. And then on the other side of it, they won't know just how to swing a hammer or you know, construct a building, but they'll have that sense of confidence that comes from starting with a problem or starting with nothing, and on the other side of it, have a home in front of them, or have, like you said, a fixed well pump. And that is very rewarding, definitely.
It is. I mean, especially if it's like with sewer systems or anything in your house. And the thing is, when you help out someone, let's say it's they have a bad thermostat, and this happened to me on numerous occasions. You go over there and do one little thing, and I do this more or less with side work now. You're there for 2 weeks doing other stuff, and that's why I call my matting money, because the profession I'm in now is injection molding. Sure. I'm a machinist working on molds.
Yep. Yes.
So what I take from that the metal part breaks on my lawnmower, I can
make a mold and have it injected and have a new part.
Injected, or else the steel, I can mill it out myself. So, and that's what I want to tell you. Just look at it as the way you can take away from it and do.
Yeah.
So, and I just think that's very important. And when I went into the business, it was a lot harder than it is now. The pay scale is way much higher now.
Oh, sure.
Way much higher. Because my first electrical apprenticeship job is $5.25 an hour.
Yeah.
And then I had this. So it's I think the young people, the way the apprenticeship programs are run now are a little easier. I think a lot of the schooling should be done in more or less tech school, because the way Vermont is, sometimes you have to drive 40 miles to your job site, and the way it was, you have to either go to Hartford or Barrie to school at night, and when you're working 4:10 or something, that's a long day.
That is a very long day. And setting yourself up for that type of, you know, schooling work schedule can be grueling, but it does have a really bright light at the tunnel. So
I guess where I was going with that, but they've made it a lot easier. Now they have interactive, you can do it online. So it's much easier for the younger folk today than it was then.
And then the other thing, too, is I'll say is, even that I would finish off with my kids when I would tell them this, I said, listen, even if you don't stay in the trades and you're not going to fix it yourself, or you do make enough money where you can hire somebody, you're not going to be – it's not as likely that you're going to be taken advantage of, because you're going to be able to know if this person knows what they're doing, because you have that same type of experience. You know, and that's where I think it pays off on the other side as well.
Yep.
Well, see, it's – Well, it's good that you brought that up, because I had a woman call me, which I've worked on her furnace before, but, you know, it's a time thing. Yeah, probably. We'll just call your whoever you use. And it didn't really sound like a huge problem. I think was happening. I mean, she had an old tank and is just getting sludged up. And basically, it's, you know, change out the tank. Well, they changed out the tank, and they did a bunch of other stuff that didn't even need to happen.
Yeah.
So she kind of got, taken advantage of. And so what you, well, kind of like what you're saying, you go back to the point. As long as you know what's going on, you know, you can really keep an eye on things, because there is some swindlers out there.
Yep, that's sure. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. So Mark, we're getting to the end of the show. I want to thank you very much,
sure,
for calling and giving us your thoughts on that.
Yeah,
we agree
definitely.
Completely.
Yeah. Hey, you guys are doing a great, great job with this show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
and
Mark.
You have a good rest of your weekend.
You too.
So this is the second to last episode of House
for
Call.
This season.
For this season. Well,
yep.
For this season, we're going to be having one more show. I believe it is
next week,
and that'll be the last show of this season. Hopefully, coming back in the fall.
Yep.
So one of the things that we're planning on doing in the meantime is we're going to start having our show go on to the YouTube channel. So we have a YouTube channel. If you look up on the internet, YouTube, and then space, and then House Calls Vermont, you'll get to our channel. We're going to be doing live presentations on Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern time. So if you're interested in hearing us, we're going to see if we can figure out doing call-ins. That's a little more complicated. But at the very least, we will be presenting on topics and having guests come on and talk about things, just like we've had with Steve Spatz, but also building science experts and other people. So keep an eye out for that. Also, I promised in January to start getting the indoor air quality sensors out for the indoor air quality survey.
Forgotten.
We haven't forgotten, but we've both been just slammed with work. So I apologize that we haven't gotten that out. We're going to start getting them out to you this week, and we will be following up and going through until everyone who signed up has had that indoor air quality sensor for the 1 week. And then we will concatenate and collect and analyze that data and get the data out. And we can talk about how everybody's individual house is with them specifically and what that might mean, but also what the trends that we're seeing on with that survey.
Yeah, definitely. So basically for now, we're going to, you know, sign off. But, you know, and definitely we enjoy the fact that you come each week and you listen to our show and that you engage us with questions and everything else. But spring is in the air, definitely.
And,
get out there and
if
enjoy
if you're going
to
do work on your house,
yeah,
please send us an email at housecallsvt@gmail.com if you have any questions. And go to our YouTube channel. We've got lots of instructional videos there to help you understand what we think is the right way to move forward on general questions. And we've been more than humbled by the opportunity to share this not very often spoke about edge of our lives. You know, houses, like Steve Spatz said earlier, the house is the most expensive purchase that most people will ever make.
Definitely.
And people treat it kind of laissez-faire when they're buying it, but once they own it, we want to make sure that it increases in value, that it doesn't degrade, that we're not doing things to it through a lack of knowledge that would in any way reduce the value of that investment.
So as Chris was saying, now that spring is coming, and you may not be able to get out and do what you want to do or vacation, but you said, I'm going to do some DIY projects on my home or hire a contractor. If you're going to be taking your siding off, if you're going to replace your roof or do something.
If you were going to replace roof and you have, you know, slopes or dormers.
That's when you got to consider the bigger picture.
Yep.
Don't just do one and done, call it good, and then wonder, you know, call somebody for a home performance assessment later and say, yeah, what do I need to do? And you just replace the siding or the roof or did something like that the year prior or the months prior. Give us a call now or give somebody in the EEN network at Efficiency Vermont a call,
yep,
so that you can know how the house is performing as a system and take full advantage of the opportunities when you move forward instead of saying, I wish I would have done it differently. That's what we're here for.
Consider that your house is ill. You need someone to give you an assessment of what that illness is, and the
like
best
a house
way
call, you mean?
Like,
I'm sorry.
Building science knowledge. So we're at the end of the show today. Thank you all so much for listening. This is Chris West
and Jim Bradley
with House Calls Vermont, and we'll see you next week.
House Calls Vermont, brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barry, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basementy. NorthernAnyFoundations.com. Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association, homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington, one call does it all, online at polyconstruction.com. Our house, it has a crowd.